I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And welcome to the Sportive Podcast. This is Stu. John's not here again. Clarence is not here again. Brandon is not here again. You probably figured that out. So I am on a local farmer's kitchen table. That local farmer's name is Josh Fiedler. Josh, say hello.
Hello, Stu. Good to be back for the fourth appearance. I think if my memory's correct, the fourth appearance on the Sportive.
I think it is. We're sharing one mic like a Johnny and June Carter Cash at the Grand Ole Opry right now. What's wrong? Oh, I'm going
to... Sit next to each other.
We could. That would be kind of... I don't know. We're going to try to get this to work over the course of the table here. That didn't make sense. But anyway, so we're sharing a mic, talking about sports. Let's see. First things first. Minnesota Twins won today, 5-3. I went to the game. I have a on-the-scene report. I watched the game with local baseball luminary Hans Van Sluten and local baseball fan Mandy Newman, with a cameo by Patrick Donnelly of the Associated Press. They won 5-3 today. Things of note, it took forever for the game to finish because it was Adalberto Mejia, who actually pitched okay, I think, and some Odorino for Tampa. And it was kind of dragged a lot. And then Brian Dozier came through finally after a really sluggish start to the year with a two-run home run, I think, in the eighth. And then Byron Buxton with an insurance run after that. So shut up, sportive guys. So yeah, we after last night, they ran into Chris Archer last night and got drilled, but they dusted themselves off, and they will be in first place no matter what on Memorial Day. And that is crazy. Over to you, Josh.
You know, I didn't officially document on the Twitter my bros and turds. And I probably would be a little more optimistic if we had more than three competent starters. Mm-hmm. But had I documented my bro and my turd, my bro would have been Hector Santiago. I think I put that out on the Twitter a little bit.
Yeah.
Gave John all kinds of shit for all the shit that he gave Hector. And I heard Hector's a real nice guy, puts in a lot of time with the local boys and girls clubs, children's hospitals, that sorts of things. So, John, I hope you really know the kind of guy that you're criticizing there. But anyway, that said... my turd, at least I do have text record proof of this or text message record of this before the season started, was Kyle Gibson. And Gibby, as we know, is taking the mound tomorrow. So I tend to get more optimistic about the Twins than any. They don't have to give me much to get optimistic and get excited compared to the other local sports teams. But man, if we had more than three starters, it'd be a little bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I'm just, if you hear like a dragon sound, that's me pulling the mic away from Josh and to me. That's really a 21st century technology going wild here. I did not know who was starting tomorrow, but I mean, Gibson makes sense because who else? They don't have anybody else right now. Seriously, who would start if it wasn't Gibson? I don't know. I don't know who it would be. So yeah, that's going to be what they throw out. Of course, his last start, he got pasted by the Orioles, and then the Twins' offense went nuts, and he pitched like a 1-2-3 top of the fifth to get a win in a 14-7 victory. So can they do that again tomorrow? I have no idea. I do know that most of their, at least three of their starters will be fresh, although I know Sano, Polanco, and Buxton all got in the game later today, but they all sat today, day game after a night game, and I think Sano struck out like his last eight at-bats or something insane like that, but I'm not going to panic about that because I panicked about spring training, and he's a top five player in the American League right now, so not going to worry about that too much, and I guess we'll just see what happens with Gibby tomorrow. Man, it stinks that, and again, this is just to build on what Josh said, that there isn't a third, even adequate starter. Maybe Mejia will be that guy, but we really don't know enough yet. He's had two competent starts in a row.
I'd say.
And that's about all you can ask for out of a guy who's, you know, he was there, you know, he was just the throw-in in the Eduardo Nunez Squidward trade, and he just... It's a chip in a chair, I think, is what it comes down to. Over to you, Josh.
Let me ask you this, Stu. I think he couldn't pitch tomorrow, of course, and would have to get stretched out. But there's not a capable fifth starter necessarily in the minor league system either. So would you try Duffy, or has he been too valuable in the bullpen? He's been unbelievable in the bullpen. So do you stretch him out and hope that he is a fifth starter, or is he too valuable where he is right now?
I would say he's too valuable where he is right now because their bullpen is a lot of you're throwing darts basically. I mean, Taylor Rogers has been really good. Kinsler has been Eddie Guardado. Ryan Pressly will look like a shutdown reliever one appearance and then give up a 500-foot bomb the next one. As far as Duffy goes, I think the Trevor May situation has them spooked about vacillating between bullpen and starter because May broke down at the end of the season 2 years ago, and he obviously tore his UCL this spring. I can't imagine just changing approaches helps with the stress on one's arm at all. So I would think Duffy's going to be there all season, and I think if they were to convert him to a starter, it would be in the off season where they can prepare and not like throw him right into it and risk putting undue stress on his arm.
Yeah, I think I agree with that approach. And unfortunately, again, like I said, there's just not an obvious pitching candidate in the minors for them to call up either, assuming now Mejia sticks. Mm-hmm. Hughes is going to be out for a while. The problem with Gibson, though, is that you're essentially telling your offense you're going to have to score 7-8 runs to pull off the W, and Gibson's on the mound. And he's been that way for a year and a half or so. So this isn't new. But just generally, how fun is this team to watch? Because they're improved on defense compared to a year ago. This is one of the better Twins defenses, I would say, in the last 10 to 15 years. It might be the best. And the majority of the positive contributions they're getting are all from players who – trademark, sport of trademark here, will only get better as their careers go on. The Polanco, Rosario, Sano, Buxton, Kepler, Vargas, Berrios, they will only continue to get better. And we say that a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but all of them have higher ceilings. Maybe not Sano, but all of them have higher ceilings, even than what they've shown. And they've shown enough to make this team a whole hell of a lot of fun to watch.
Yes, Josh, I agree. Sorry. I almost knocked the beer over pulling the mic back to me. The summer is going to actually be interesting, and I didn't expect it. Like I said, they're going to be in first place on Memorial Day, no matter what happens tomorrow. And that's great. That is more than anybody reasonably expected. I mean, again, Pecota had them at 78 wins. People laughed at Pecota. I mean, even Aaron Gleeman, our friend, was more on the maybe more like 73, 74 guys. So, but sometimes the math and the nerds are right, and it sure looks like they saw something that not a lot of us did. And it, like you said, the defense, probably their best since 1991. I mean, and I know there are a whole lot of playoff, you know, appearances between then and now, but man, it's just nothing falls. I mean, it's all it's covered. Everything is covered, and it's not. After watching the 103 losses last year, a bit, and at least I want to say 98 of those 103 losses had an error or seven. So, and I know the pitching was terrible last year too, but man, the defense was bad. And if you ever can find, I think Parker Hageman has a on Twitter has a clip. A clip show of all of the horrible defense from the Twins last year, and it's worth watching that and then watching a game this year just to see how far they've come in such a relatively short time. Let's see. Anything else on the Twins that you can think of?
Do you want to talk a bit about the draft? Because I do have an opinion on what should happen and how the Twins start should, in my opinion, impact what they do in the MLB draft here upcoming.
Yes, I think we should do that. I'll quick, the breaking news on this is that they are bringing Hunter Green in for a workout, but also at least one source is telling the Pioneer Press's Mike Berardino that he is not in the mix for the first pick of the draft. So I don't know why that would be the case, and they're also bringing him in for a workout. I don't understand baseball drafts nearly enough, but there's definitely a case to be made that if they're actually going to be good starting now, that you may have to draft according to that, with that timetable moved up.
Yeah, that was exactly my thought, is that I think that there's been three names tossed around most frequently at the top of the draft list, that being Kyle Wright, the right-handed pitcher out of Vanderbilt, Hunter Green, the high school prep player, Notre Dame High School, mm-hmm. also the alma mater of Giancarlo Stanton. And then the left-handed pitcher and first baseman, Brennan McKay. And coming into this year, my thought would have been, well, let's go with Hunter Green. He was recently on the cover of Sports Illustrated, reportedly has a fastball that exceeds 100 miles an hour as a 17-year-old. Some scouts have said he could be the best right-handed pitcher ever to come out of high school, which is pretty high praise. You got the Josh Becketts and Dwight Goodens of the world that were pretty acclaimed coming out of high school. Kerry Wood as well. So how do you pass up, even though baseball by far is the hardest sport to project in the draft for, because football they're playing the next year, basketball mm-hmm. they're playing the next year, even hockey, well, oftentimes the best play the next year. Baseball's tough to project, so to pick a high schooler does have it with some inherent risk. But when you're at that level, you're that good, that lauded, I don't want to miss necessarily on the next Doc Gooden or somebody along those lines, or even a Josh Beckett. That said, with the Twins start the way they have played and these young players developing as we've seen them this year, I would lean toward changing my thought process and going with a college player. And the player that I would pick, I think, would be Brendan McKay, the left-handed pitcher and first baseman out of Louisville, because we have to believe this team is going to be and should be relevant the next few years. And Hunter Green is not a player that can help enhance their results the next few years. A player like Ryder McKay, I'd lean McKay again, left-handed pitcher, is that type of player. So if I'm the Twins, that's the angle I go. And it's not unprecedented for guys to get drafted and then quickly make an impact afterward for teams that are on a run.
Chris Sale,
Brandon Finnegan mm-hmm. a couple years ago as well, another example.
I would probably agree with that, and I don't know, and again, I don't know the baseball amateur scene. I am not Seth Stowes by any means or any stretch of the imagination. I know, again, Hunter Green is basically, I mean, that from the SI spread, he's basically a baseball LeBron James, just a supremely gifted, young, guy and can do everything. But like you said, it's a 17-year-old baseball player. And those guys, it's a lottery ticket, mm-hmm. and you just don't know. Whereas, if this was last year, just even last year, that's the guy they take. I don't think you even second guess yourself. That's you do that. But if they're gonna try to compete here in the next 2 to 3 seasons, Hunter Green probably is in a 4 or 5 season type of situation. Whereas a college starting pitcher is probably, maybe they can draft him and call him up to be in the bullpen in September. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a consideration they have to make, I think. And it's insane that we're talking about this. It is weird that we have to talk about, if they get a good offer for Dozier or Irvin Santana, that they might have to turn it down because they need them to, you know, be relevant in September. And again, it's insane because nobody thought we'd be having this conversation. But yes, I would say, given what we know and what we've seen so far, that they should at least lean towards a college pitcher. And I will take your word for it that McKay and maybe Kyle Wright are the two best options with the first pick in the first round.
Yeah, McKay's stats, again, he plays in the ACC at Louisville. 91 innings pitched this year, 124 strikeouts, 2.37 ERA, a .98 whip, strikeouts per nine of 12.26. So he's got the numbers. One of the challenges that anybody that drafts him is going to have to look at is, does he project long-term as a left-handed pitcher, or is he project long-term as an offensive threat? But clearly, if the Twins are drafting him, you have to draft him, assuming that he's going to be a pitcher. If not, then I think you go with Wright. But draft him as a pitcher. The Twins, I think, are going to have a – they will, and they continue – will continue to have a glut of first basemen that can't do much else. Vargas is already there.
Yep.
Byung-ho Park. Palka.
Daniel Palka.
Palka. down in the minors. And as impressive as Sanoa's looked at third base, he probably projects long-term as a first baseman. Mm-hmm. First baseman as well. So yeah, if they think that McKay's better off as an offensive player, then you might not go that route. But certainly I think that teams are going to try to project him as a pitcher first.
And yeah, I mean, Twins offensively are fine where they're at right now. Unless you've got, you know, Mike Trout too coming down the line. I mean, and your first pick has to be pitching. They don't have any. I mean, just today, Nick Birdie, their stud relief prospect, Tommy John surgery. Oh, you did not know that?
No, I didn't know
that. Okay, yeah, that was this morning. Yeah, he's going under the knife. And I think he was already banged up. I think that was common knowledge, but I don't think they knew. I think he was being rested the Twins way. You know, put some ice on it, rub some dirt on it, and hopefully it'll get better. That didn't work, so... So you got him and Shagwa, the two fireballing relief prospects, both banged up. And in Birdie's case, probably not going to be around until the middle of next season, which is a complete bummer for a team that could use, I mean, anything for pitching, starting or relieving. They need all of it, and they don't have any of it. And if this, you know, again, they're, again, first place Memorial Day. I know I've said that before, but... if you think it's sustainable, you are really, really optimistic because they you just can't keep doing trotting out your Kyle Gibsons and hoping that Santiago and Mejia will be fine. You need at least one extra arm, and if you can get any bullpen help at all from the farm system, you got to have it. Mm-hmm.
And just to show that I'm in the season, I don't know if you noticed here or not, Stu, but I've got my T-shirt on, first-round draft choice. Looks like front. It's got a couple aluminum baseball bats on it, a baseball, and a mug of cold. I would say that probably looks like, what would you say, Busch Light?
That's a Busch Light draft. That is absolutely a Busch Light draft.
And then the back of it, it's number one. There's number one on the back of the shirt. So I'm ready to have the Twins select a player that will make an impact with my first-round draft shirt on. With the beer pun, the draft beer pun.
Of course.
Which, this is something I know the sportive, I haven't heard in a long time, and I am completely up to date right now on the sportives. hasn't been asked in a while, but what are you drinking tonight, Stu?
That's a great question, Josh. On the way home from the game, I stopped at Dangerous Man Brewing, a nice young brewery in northeast Minneapolis, and grabbed a growler full of Boysenberry Milkshake IPA. And as weird as that sounds, it is really good. It's got, you know, it's fruity, but it's not crazy fruity. And the IPA element is definitely there. And I would recommend it. And no, I did not ever see myself recommending a Boysenberry Milkshake IPA in my entire life. And if my dad starts listening to this, he is going to disown me. But he would not listen to a podcast because he doesn't know what a podcast is. But yeah, that's what we're drinking right now. It's really good. And I think you got a growler lined up after this, right?
Yeah, this past weekend went down and saw my in-law, or last night went down and saw my in-law's family down they're just southwest of Marshall, and came back up and got a Brawl Brothers kettle sour. And I do like sours. And my favorite sour of all time is Brawl Brothers Van Creegy Sour 26, which is a sour peated Scotch ale. And they have not made that in a couple of years, but they did make this kettle sour. So I went to the liquor store. I went to go to three separate liquor stores tonight to find it. But I picked up their Van Creegy peated Scotch ale, their normal one. So we're going to try to mix them. So we're going to try to do some, we're going to be damn near homebrewers tonight, basically.
Wow.
If we mix this kettle sour and the Van Creegy?
Wow, yeah, I would think so. And actually, that's the blend-in is, I think this is fairly well-known here that I work at Surly Brewing. Our 11th anniversary beer is actually a blended beer, too. It's a blend of a Belgian quad and a German Hefeweizen that has got 100% Brett in it. That's some funk and stuff for all you beer geeks out there. And I know if John Bonas will listen to this, he's starting to drool right now. But blending is not an uncommon thing in the brewery world, so it is uncommon to do it in your kitchen. That is, but we'll see how that goes. I think we've got baseball covered now, right?
Yeah, there's one thing I was going to mention, though. As we sit here, you mentioned in the open that we're sitting at the kitchen table of a farmhouse, and this farm, so some listeners that see it on Twitter might know, this is I'm fifth generation on this farm. And that said, my great-grandfather on this very farm was a blacksmith at one point, and he made still parts during Prohibition. Mm-hmm. And on the same farm site here, there was a country schoolhouse, and what he would do during Prohibition is he would hide the still parts in the attic of the schoolhouse. And then in the middle of the night, folks that we know did sell moonshine to Al Capone would come and get their parts from the great-grandfather. So if he can brew still, if he can make still parts for Al Capone, I think we can try to do some blending tonight.
I think that's fair. I think that's something we can absolutely do. We also have a third person here at the table, Josh's wife, Liz. Say hi, Liz.
Hi, everyone.
Liz has a headache, right, Liz?
Yeah.
She does, so we're not going to bug her too much about it, but she's here too, to in case we get out of line or start fighting about hockey, because we're both very passionate about the Predators, whoever they're playing.
Your Preds!
My Preds are playing against, crap, who's in the Stanley Cup? Pittsburgh. So yeah, we're very, Josh is a Penguins guy, I'm a Predators guy. So I think we might start fighting here.
You need a nurse.
And Liz is a nurse, so if we need help, we've got some. Piper, are you doing okay in there?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if the mic picked that up, but my daughter's also here. Let's see. Next on the agenda, do you want to do the quiz or do you want to talk about Zimmer?
We go to Zimmer.
Let's go to Zimmer. This week, Mike Zimmer had his 9,000th eye surgery because apparently he had like his subway card all filled up. So the 9,000th one is free. That's, I think, what his HSA covers. So I don't know what it means other than there's a really good chance he's probably going to go blind in that eye. You can't have that many surgeries on your eye in that little time and have it be good for your eye. It sounds like they're just trying to save as much vision as they can. And I guess I don't know what'll be difficult for a coach, especially like Zimmer, who seems to be really focused, and that was a bad unintentional pun, on the defense. And you know, for somebody who like breaking down game film, I am blessed to have vision in both eyes. I don't know if anybody listening here is only working with one eye, but I have to imagine fatigue on the one working eye to break down hours and hours and hours of game film can't be great. And I could very well be wrong. Maybe you only need the one eye to do that, but it seems suboptimal for somebody trying to get detail and, you know, over and over and over seeing where, well, that, you know, the A gap is getting plugged by the, you know, the Mike linebacker, and that I'm completely talking out of my ass right now, but I'm just trying to figure out if that it can't be good is what I'm trying to say. And I don't think he needs to quit because of it at all. But I do think there should probably be some concern just for his general health and maybe looking to the future, maybe he probably maybe doesn't have as many years left to coach as we thought even 1 year ago.
Yeah, it's tough to say. As you said, we're hardly ophthalmologists. No. I think that's
that's right. You got that right.
Okay. that said, I did find it a little bit humorous. I saw on Twitter today, I don't know who tweeted it out, but someone did, that there was a member of the Vikings PR staff, and I'll be damned if I can remember his name. He was back there all 8 years when I wrote for the Vikings too, but I can't remember his name. But anyway, a member of the Vikings PR staff had informed Zimmer that there are over 400 actors, I believe, that are blind in one eye. So I don't
400?
I think it was actors. I don't even know. But I thought it was a little bit humorous that the Vikings PR staff was informing Zimmer about all the...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Amazing people that do things with one eye. That's where you're getting your motivation from or your feel goods. But I don't know. You know, a guy like Zimmer isn't going to quit until he physically can't do it.
Yeah.
I think we saw that last year. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's what makes the Vikings Twitter avatar folks go crazy for him. So I don't know. If it were me, I would probably have a little bit different view. But hey, he's one of those guys. As most NFL coaches, they live to coach, and they'll do it until they physically can't do it anymore, or no one else is willing to hire them to do it anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you look at guys like, you know, Marty Schottenheimer, Dick Vermeil. They basically had to be dragged kicking and screaming off the field, or they just couldn't get employed anymore. One of the two. It's just. He's that type of guy. I mean, Clarence, I know we're treading on thin ice here because Clarence will listen to this. And if he thinks we're in any way denigrating Mike Zimmer, or if I were to point out that Brad Childress has had more success in the NFL than Mike Zimmer, that would get me in trouble. But that's just a hypothetical. That's actually true. But I think the only Vikings news of note is that he had another eye surgery, and I just feel bad for the guy because I would never be able to put contact lenses in because I have a thing about eyes and it just would just freak me out. So having 8 surgeries on your eyeball was just a nightmare for me to consider, and I just hope things go okay for him, and I hope they're a good football team this year, but I have no idea. I think that's it for football.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay,
yeah.
What's next, Josh?
Well, I've got here, Stu, is I know last week on The Sportive, Brandon had mentioned that he's joining CrossFit.
Yes, he is.
And that got me to thinking about, I've never done CrossFit, so I guess I'll throw that out there, but I have my impressions of what CrossFit does. So what I thought I would do, what I came up with here, is a list of items where you have to tell me, are these real things that CrossFitters do and also farmers do, or are these just things that farmers do? So whenever you're ready, I'll fire off the first one here if you're
okay,
ready.
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, all right. So I've got a list of, it looks like about 7 or 8 of them here. So we'll start with one.
Okay, do you want to just let me know if I get it right away? Or
yeah.
Do all, okay.
Yep, okay. The first one we're going to go with is a tractor tire flip. Is that real CrossFit item or just something that farmers do?
I think I have seen, and every CrossFit gym is in a sketchy part of town, like an old pole barn, and there's always one tractor tire in that pole barn. So I'm going to say that that is a thing that both farmers and CrossFitters do.
Ding, ding, ding.
Nice.
Yes, you're one for one.
Okay.
One for one. That is, in fact, something both that CrossFitters do as well as farmers.
Okay.
So, okay. Number two, the 100-yard carry of 4 50-pound pails of chicken feed. Is that something CrossFitters do or just farmers?
Let's see. I have seen buckets at the gym. I have seen people carry inordinate amounts of goofy, heavy stuff. But I'm going to say that is just something that farmers do.
That's incorrect.
Ah!
Yeah, that's they may not necessarily be chicken feed, but carrying 4 50-pound pails 100 yards long is something that both CrossFitters and farmers do.
Okay,
farmers typically chicken feed.
Break. That's insane. There.
Well, hey, it's CrossFit.
Okay.
They also drink coconut milk, and there's only one type of milk any self-respecting American this Memorial Weekend should be drinking, and that's from a damn dairy cow. So anyway, I didn't. You know, just like, your dad didn't lay face down in the muck this Memorial Day weekend.
No.
I didn't get up at 5:30 in the morning to milk fucking dairy cows to have people drinking coconut milk. Goodness sakes.
Hey, Merle.
So, all right. Next one. The 80-pound newborn calf around the shoulder carry. Is that something CrossFitters do or just farmers?
Again, I've seen CrossFitters carry stuff like that around their neck in the shape of a calf. So, I'm going to say just farmers.
Ding, 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 ding.
Woo!
2 for 3. That'd be just something farmers do, 80-pound newborn calf. If you've not seen photos like it, look it up. They throw them around the shoulder, carry them in. Real nurturing to those animals. So
oh, yeah.
That's, you're 2 for 3. Okay. Number 4. The square hay bale distance toss. Is that something farmers do or CrossFitters do or just farmers?
One reason I was a bad farm kid is that, for one, although I grew up in a farm town, I lived in town. So my farm experience was limited to like walking bean fields, corn to tasseling, spraying weeds, rock picking. But one thing that I would not touch is baling hay, because baling hay is just thankless fucking work. I think everyone agrees on that. As far as tossing hay bales, I think that is just something farmers do, because I don't think even CrossFitters are that nuts.
That's correct.
Okay.
The square bale, ding, ding, ding. The square bale hay toss is just something farmers do. A little side note there. So freshman year out at St. John's, this would have been back in 1999, there was a group on campus that celebrated Agricultural Weekend. It was a salute to Ag Nationwide. And I came in to St. John's as a burly, strong, strapping, 135-pound man. So as part of this, they actually had a square bale hay toss. This was pre CrossFit. Mm-hmm. And I watched these 300-plus-pound linemen, including one out at St. John's, who was a fellow Sartell alum of mine and had been offered an offensive lineman scholarship to Wisconsin, Big Ten, ended up going to St. John's. Anyway, they tried to toss these square bales, and this strapping young 135-pound beast of a man beat all those offensive linemen, including the guy that was offered to Wisconsin. So, anyway.
You're pretty proud of that.
I'm pretty proud of that, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Next up, we got three more to go. The deadlifting hanging quarters of raw beef. Is that something CrossFitters do or just farmers?
Deadlifting, I think, is a big component of CrossFitting, even if it's not raw beef. So I'm going to say, yes, that is something that CrossFitters and farmers do.
Ding, ding, ding. You are right again.
Man.
Yes, that is something both farmers, farmers would only do it in the unfortunate event they had to slaughter one. But and CrossFitters, I'm sure, would be willing to do it, just grab a hold. They probably take a bite out of it when they're done, too. But in any event, protein. I can't have too much of that when you're CrossFitting.
No.
So that's right there. Okay. All right. The 70-foot silo ladder climb. Is that something CrossFitters do or just farmers?
There are definitely climbing elements to CrossFit, but I don't think anybody climbs 70 feet at CrossFit. So I'm going to say that is strictly something that farmers do because silos are silos.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh. Yes, right again. That is just something farmers do. So like, as you said, they may do some climbing and whatnot, but only farmers are the ones climbing up 70-foot silos. Okay, here's the last one. The sledgehammer flip. Is that something CrossFitters do or just farmers when they're really fucking pissed off? And the fence post in the yard broke again because the bull ran through it. And they need to pound the new stake back in the ground. That corner post. The sledgehammer flip. Is that something that CrossFitters do or just farmers?
I think... Oh, man. I'm going to say that's something just farmers do. Oh, man.
Unfortunately, you ended on a low note. The sledgehammer flip is something that both CrossFitters do as well as farmers. So, I don't know. You probably got... 3/4 of them, right? That wasn't too bad.
Five out of seven, I think, right?
Yeah, that wasn't too bad.
No, that was pretty good. I'm pretty pleased with that. I was kind of skeptical that I would. I mean, I think with some of the pyrometric or pyromania or Def Leppard album things I've been doing for my gym routine has like had some elements of this. So I think that's probably why I did okay with that. And also, you know, just being out here and then growing up in Hector, I know some farm things. I'm not great at it. By God, I don't know near enough about tractors you would be ashamed about how little I know. There's John Deere. There's International Harvester. There's the orange one.
Alice Chalmers.
Farmall, is that one of them?
Well, they merged into International Harvester, okay. Which merged into Case IH.
Okay, Case was going to be a separate answer of mine, so God,
They got them right, though. Those were former tractors.
Okay.
It was a consolidation.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Okay, I tried. You hear me, everybody? I tried. Let's see. Are there any other sports? We've got, Stanley Cup starts on Monday. NBA Finals start on June 1st, which is like 3 weeks from now or something like that. Actually, no, it's Thursday because that's my longtime sportive listeners, my oldest daughter, Celia, the angriest point guard in Stearns County, is graduating from high school on Thursday. So if I sound emotional or you see me just being all weepy on social media, that's why. She graduates from high school on Thursday. She is going to Montana State at the end of the summer. So I just want to say thanks to everybody who's listened to the show and followed my basketball adventures with her as she capped out at 5'1". So, that's why she didn't play the last couple of years, but, she was the angriest, meanest point guard in Stearns. I actually had parents from Foley yelling at her, which was one of my proudest moments as a father, because she sort of did a cheap shot foul, kind of swept the leg Johnny a little bit on somebody who was driving the lane, and it was actually a pretty proud moment for me. So anyway, that's a little personal update here. God, Josh, did we cover everything already? We're 36 minutes into this. We did say it was going to be a shortive instead of a sportive. We're going to actually try to record an actual Honest to God episode early in the week, this coming week, but we wanted to give something to the listeners they could listen to on the way home, sitting in traffic on 94 from Detroit Lakes or Osakis or Pequot Lakes or wherever the hell you chose to spend all of your time this weekend. We stayed home because it was actually really easy to get a parking spot today. Although it was a fairly full crowd, I would say probably 20,000. It was easy to park. It was easy to find a place to post up and drink. We stopped at Modest Brewing before the game. Transitioning back to beer here, we went to Modest, had their coffee beer, and then they had an anniversary double IPA, and it was strong, really, really strong. So that's why I avoided beer at the baseball game. Also, beer is like $1,000 at the baseball game. but if you're going to spend $1,000 on a beer, they do sell Surly there. Enjoy Surly Furious. Let's see. Anything else? Did you know Waylon Jennings covered Do It Again by Steely Dan?
No, did not know that.
He did. It's circa 1980. My sensible and classy Kia Sorento has free Sirius radio. this week. I think they do that over the Memorial Day holiday. And they played Do It Again, which is a Steely Dan. Mm-hmm. Everyone who has listened to KQRS once in the last 20 years knows what Do It Again is. Waylon covered that in 1980. And You know that Waylon is very good with covers. And I don't know how I feel about it. If you want to, it's on YouTube. I don't know if it's on Spotify, but you can definitely find it on YouTube. Would you like to talk about your three favorite Waylon Jennings songs?
Oh boy, you put me on the spot here.
Yeah.
I won't say my three favorite, but I can give you three of my favorite. How about
okay.
that?
Okay. How about three that our listeners maybe haven't heard? Everyone's probably heard, you know, Amanda.
Yep.
Or a couple of his other, like, you know, Only Daddy Little Walk the Line, stuff like that. Three songs that maybe they've never heard of that they can probably hunt down and add. He's pulling up a playlist right now, I think. Josh is the leading Waylon Jennings fanboy in the outstate Minnesota region. He has many Waylon albums on vinyl. I've seen them before. It is impressive as hell. So I'm going to throw the mic over to him and have him throw out three, let's say, just, you know, deep cuts, covers, live shots, non-traditional Waylon songs that the sportive nation would like to hear or could hear and maybe put on their own playlists.
All right, there were two that came to immediate mind. And so I'm going to go 3-2-1. I said I don't know if I'd be able to. I reserve the right to change these, of course. And to tell anybody that ridicules me on Twitter, they're fucking full of shit. They're wrong. I'm right. That said, I'm going to go number three. Here we go. Will the Wolf Survive? That was a song Waylon released in 86 off an album by the same name. Mm-hmm. So still available in vinyl. Will the Wolves Survive, number three. Check that one out. It's a more upbeat Waylon song. Does have a little bit of production to it, which generally I'm opposed to. But that is a solid, solid song. Again, Will the Wolves Survive on an album by the same name. Number two, I'm going to say Clyde. And Clyde played the electric bass. And that song was off his 1980 album, Music Man. Dang good song, good beat, so early in the career. And actually, was off the same album that Waylon recorded the theme from the Dukes of Hazzard, The Good Old Boys, which is hardly furthest thing possible from Waylon Jennings' deep cut. Mm-hmm. And for those that aren't the fans of country, but do have anything remotely close to a decent taste in cinematic perfection. Those that watch, they're fans of the Dukes of Hazzard, which I own every season of the Dukes of Hazzard on DVD. I mean, you may or may not believe that. But anyway, theme of Dukes of Hazzard, The Good Old Boys, and Clyde on the same 1980 album, Music Man. And I would say the number one deep cut for Waylon Jennings, and again, I'm not going super deep here because I want to make sure these are songs that the listeners could find on YouTube or Spotify, is Rose in Paradise. And that was released in 87 on the album Hangin' Tough, about a cheating, no good woman who either ran off with the groundskeeper or was never to be heard from again, or was chopped up Fargo style and put into the ground along with the groundskeeper on the grounds of which she cheated while her husband and successful businessman was away. I think it was probably the latter. Again, she's no good. But Rose in Paradise, number one. So three, I'm going to go with, again, Will the Wolf Survive? Number two, Clyde. And number one, Rose in Paradise. You can thank me later. I'm right. If you have an alternate opinion, you're wrong. But that's the way I'm going to go.
And I would also say, if you can find it, if you've not heard Are You Sure Hank Done It This Way, that's just an immortal song. Alt country guys who listen to this, Uncle Tupelo covered that with Joe Ely, who's both good artists in their own right, and it's still not as good as Waylon's original version, because it just that weird. I don't know how you would describe the guitar sound from 70s Waylon records. It wasn't country, it wasn't rock and roll, but it was something in that little no man's land in between, that like kind of like, almost like a steel guitar type of whine to it, and It has aged really, really well. So anyway, those are our Waylon Jennings selections. I can't
story.
Oh well, yes, and story time with Josh to close out the show here.
All right, so last time I was on, which I think it was actually two times ago. Last time I was on was episode 113, and this, I think, is episode 212. So
yes.
I was on 99 episodes ago on July 15 with Cousin Brian,
yes.
who at the time told the story about drilling wells for Surly.
Yes, he did.
Which is...
Yeah.
How the world turns.
Yeah, the wolf has survived.
The wolf has survived. So I think maybe two times ago, I told a story about the time that I got my whole softball team kicked out of the game, and there were some sportive commenters that said you'd have Josh back on for story time. And so as Stu and I did just a very, very, very minimal, and I mean very minimal amount of show prep here.
Yes.
I did think about, okay, story time with Josh. So I tell a quick story here. This is back in 1998. The fall of our senior year, several buddies of mine and I would ride around in the back of pickup trucks, as you do when you're a high school senior in Stearns County. Yeah. And we happened to find a couch in a ditch. And so we threw that couch in the back of one of the trucks. And that whole fall, we oftentimes ran around town or rode around town in the back of the truck sitting on this couch. Well, after the first semester was done, our senior year of high school, we were going to have a book-burning party to burn some AP English course books that were taken. And I sure as hell wasn't in that class, but I was happy to go to the party and have a beer or two. Anyway, so we knew this was going to go on, and we told the participants that are going to be at this party. There was probably 70 or 80 people are going to be at the party to show up at this hill in Sartell, this big sledding hill, at midnight, right on the nuts. Mm-hmm. And some buddies of mine and I decided we're going to take this couch that we had been riding on and throw it over the fence to get onto this hill, set it at the top of the hill, strap two of those plastic sleds to it.
Oh my God.
This is December, right? So put a sled on each side. And so we did that, and we saw the cars pulling in at the bottom of the hill that we were on top of. And cars pulling in, pulling in, pulling in. So 70, 80 people at the bottom of the hill, and it's dark, wondering what the hell is going on. So right at the stroke of midnight, we took lighter fluid, doused the couch full of lighter fluid, lit the son of a bitch on fire, rode it down the sledding hill all the way to the bottom, quickly jumped off. Everyone saw 5-6 of us that were riding this flaming couch down the hill, if you can imagine. We jumped over the fence, got the hell out of there, went to the party. Well, once we got back to the party, we thought, well, the cops have seen this couch often. They saw in the back of the truck for about 3-4 months, and they're going to know where this couch came from. So really poor planning, but you don't think that far ahead when you're a high school senior. You're thinking about doing cool shit and finding girls, I guess, more or less. Mm-hmm. So we go back, and we needed to find this couch. And so we go back at the couch, throw it back over the fence, throw it back at the back of the truck, drive back to the party thinking, okay, thankfully we got it back in the truck before the cops found out that there was a flaming couch on this hill in the middle of Sartell. So about 20 minutes later, the cops show up, and we're thinking, ah, shit, somebody must have seen this here. And the cops said, we got a report of neighbors saying something smells like burning tires. And we said, well, no, officer, we're serious. We're just burning some textbooks here, some papers, having a good time. The beer bottles were thrown into the bushes, so you didn't see the Holocaust, right? And we said, well, no, we're just burning these books. And so he goes away. We think, we know what the neighbors are smelling. It's that smoldering couch in the back of the truck. We better get the hell out of town. And so we start driving this couch out of town. We get about a mile out of town, and the oxygen from driving this couch down the road lights the son of a bitch on fire again. So here we are in the back of this truck, about 4 or 5 of us, in this 84 Chevy Scottsdale pickup truck, with a couch that is full up in flames in the back of this truck, and we're still just barely on the outskirts of town. And so we pull over, go in the ditch, trying to get some snow on this couch to put the flame out. And fortunately, we were able to get it. We brought it out to the farm here, threw it in the front yard. Parents next morning asked, why is the smoldering couch sitting in our front yard? And I just mumbled some things, and I said, Dad, all that matters is I was up in time this morning to milk cows. So we got her done. But there is the story of the smoldering couch.
Was it a hide-a-bed?
It was one fucking heavy couch. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, it was a heavy one. But It went up in flames like you just it was dry as could possibly be. Went up in big flames, and that's the story of the flaming couch.
If you're from a small town, you absolutely have a story exactly like that. With the cops showing up at the gravel pit party that you were at with a Coors party ball and Guns N' Roses on somebody's halfway shot tape deck in their, you know, Buick, their parents' Buick Riviera. that might have been a personal story for me. So anyway, thank you, Josh. That was an awesome story. I think that's it. We got to the 50-minute mark.
There you go.
That was great. We did a hell of a job here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We're probably going to get this posted Sunday night unless Brandon, like, throws out his arm, which is always possible for a town ball guy. But and he's definitely getting old. Brandon, you're getting old. You know this. It hurts. But I'm telling you, you're getting old. You're aging. And I'm sorry. But, yeah, he will hopefully get that posted, and you can listen to this while you're stuck on Highway 10 or Highway 94 on Sunday night, Monday morning, Monday afternoon. Josh, thank you again.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you, Stu.
And we're going to finish this growler and probably just hang out a little bit more, and that'll be that. Have a great rest of your Memorial Day weekend. If you know a veteran, give them a hug, especially if there are family who has passed in the line of duty, which is the actual Memorial Day reason. And boy, did I phrase that horribly. It was a good sentiment that I phrased horribly. But anyway, just love all of y'all, and we'll talk to you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.